Today on Wrapped BizTrend TV, we're pleased to welcome Mungezi Mtati, Senior Brand Strategist at Roger Wilco and host of the Lead Creative Podcast, a platform where he speaks to creative leaders and marketers who are shaping culture. He's worked on brands like Nestle, Standard Bank, and Babcock, and contributes insights to the Township CX Report, an influential study which has been featured in the media, such as CNBC Africa, CNN, Forbes, and many others. We're so happy to welcome him to share a deeper dive into the insights from the report and to be able to share them here via Biz Community, Wrapped, and Real Networks channels. My name is Bronwyn Williams, and I'd like to welcome you to today's episode. So let's get into it. Mungezi, the Township CX report is now in its fifth year.
Yeah.
So who are the main voices behind the report, and why is it being seen as such an influential study?
So the voices change from time to time. We largely, of course, cover the township markets, as it says, and we try to understand the township residents' sort of attitudes towards brands, what's trending, and what has happened over the past sort of year or whatever the case is. So the main voices we then get are people who work in these industries, in the township, within brands, people who are influential in the spaces that touch township lives or township people's lives, such as, I mean, we have contributors from, say, Tiger Brands, contributors from Capitec, contributors from Sanlam, and a few other brands, just to give us a sense of what's happening in the industry, how they as brands are interacting and engaging with people in townships, as well as everything else that's kind of happening in the township from the voice, rather, or the perspective of someone who works within the township market.
Okay, so as an insider in the sector, who is paying attention to this report and these sorts of insights? Who are the people that are reading and paying attention to consumer trends within township markets?
Yeah, so it's largely the brands. So it's largely the brands that we kind of, firstly, who contribute, but also just brands within the FMCG space, brand, consumer brands. And funnily, it's also just NPOs and organizations that engage with townships, because the thing that we are seeing is that township residents are saying that brands that don't participate and are seen to be active in townships are not trusted and therefore not engaged with by the township consumers. So it's a combination of, firstly, the township consumers themselves, people who work in the township market, as well as the brands that are trying to make inroads in there. Because with the increase of inflation, what we are seeing is that people will change the brands that they buy, right? Like 39% of our respondents are saying that if prices rise, they will change brands. And this isn't a sign of people being disloyal to brands. It's largely a sign of, is the brand loyal to the people who are buying it?
Okay, so now talk to me about the gentrification of the township economy, or brands moving into the space and increasingly trying to lead the conversation and use, of course, smart marketing analytics and people like yourself, of course, to get advantage in that space. How is that intersecting with the entrepreneurs have really developed the space in the first place, the small businesses, the spaza shop owners, the incumbents? So how are you seeing that interplay?
Yeah, so there are different parts to it. I mean, the one part is, I mean, how you've referred to it, I think, gentrification. But I think where it's positive is that some of these brands are getting in there trying to understand and build partnerships. So as an example, one of our contributors in the 2025 report is Shop to Shop, right? The point of system and payments type of brand, point of sale system and payments. So what they are doing is partnering with spaza shops, partnering within what was once termed the informal economy, and trying to get a sense of how to partner better, right? Mm-hmm. So one, it enables these partnerships. On the other side of that, it also allows brands to understand what's happening in this space. For instance, we've got 71% of our respondents this year say they belong to a Stockfel. And of course, with Stockfels doing group buying at stores that sell in bulk, those brands are able to understand how these groups operate and how these groups plan. And we've seen that in stock files, for instance. I mean, over the past 2 years, there's been a 39% increase of people who say they belong to a spaza shop. So in terms of what happens with the data, what happens with the insights, it enables these partnerships and these bridges to be created.
Well, that leads us up next nicely to the next question, which is about the report that we're here to discuss, the Breaking Boundaries Report. Mm. Can you tell us a bit about the title? What boundaries are being broken? What bridges are being
broken? For sure. So I think the biggest boundary that exists, not just in the township, but everywhere else, but it's seen very much so in the township, is the hurdle of, I suppose, access to income or economic boundaries, as it were, right? So people are having to make do with less, and they have to buy more and more with less and less money, right? So I think with this interplay of having to do less, or having to do more with less, we are seeing that people are finding creative ways of sharing deals using social media platforms like TikTok, Facebook, and everywhere else that they're using creatively. We're also seeing that people are sharing this information among themselves in their own WhatsApp groups, right? So there's this boundary, I suppose, of information, or hurdle of information spreading among people and across groups, in various groups and various age groups, that is really on the rise in townships. And that's one of those boundaries that we're seeing. And of course, I suppose, utilizing information between townships, which is another really interesting thing as well, because in the past, I suppose, pre-social media, I would have had to have come from Tembisa to understand what's happening in Tembisa. But the moment I get to Khayelitsha, the likelihood of me knowing what's happening in Khayelitsha, which fast food restaurant or which eatery to go to, I wouldn't know. But with the rise of social media and the rise of connectivity, people are able to now spread this information across.
So yes, let's lean into that whole conversation around digital word of mouth. So using those communication platforms to share information about deals, about the best places to go, new opportunities. How are brands entering that space? Because what you've described seems to be very sort of organic and peer-to-peer. But how now is that being formalized, and are marketers, brands taking advantage of that space?
In some instances, they are. So because I also, I suppose, work within this digital space, the conversations that happen there in terms of, firstly, targeting consumers, it occurs by and large to target consumers that live outside of townships. Whereas when you are in a township, so if I leave Sandton and I go into Tembisa, Fosteress, or wherever else, the likelihood of a brand that targets me in Sandton is less likely to be visible on social media when I'm outside of, say, a Sandton or a suburb or whatever the case is, right? So brands are still sort of slow on the uptake where that's concerned, but where the brands that are making use of it are benefiting is that they organically become part of conversations. Because what we are seeing about this spread of word of mouth over the past 5 years that we've been doing this report is that word of mouth is becoming more and more digital. These conversations are happening more and more on digital platforms with Facebook and WhatsApp in the lead, and TikTok as well, where TikTok is used largely to share experiences and share, I suppose, food experiences and videos from township to township, or at least between sort of townships and people who are watching, whereas Facebook and WhatsApp are used to share deals and discounts and things like that. So in terms of where brands are playing, they are visible to people talking among themselves. But if you're invisible on the ground in the township, the likelihood of you being in these conversations is limited.
I find that really, really interesting, especially when we look at the shift that's also taking our place in terms of our online search, right? Mm-hmm. Search engines will optimize, pay-per-click advertisers will optimize by the biggest brands could pay for the most space, could produce the most content, could get the most traffic.
Yeah.
And with like the agentic era of search, it's preferencing things like references and referrals and what other people are saying about your brand. This is a challenge for brands, because the only way to get into that space, from what you're saying, is by actually doing and being good enough that people talk about you. Mm-hmm. You can't hack it, right? You can't just pay money to be there.
Yeah,
I think this loops back, of course, into the conversation around price sensitivity, right? Mm. So brands can't tell you that they are more valuable than the non-branded good. They have to demonstrate that value to a point that actually convinces a real person to tell another real person that story.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And I think one of the debates that we're having with the team as part of writing this report was, what's the difference between a discount and a promotion? Kind of thing, right? And I think it's where that line kind of lives, because something can be discounted, sit on a shelf and forgotten, but another one can be spoken about. It could be spread through radio, it could be spread through social media. So I think there's this balance of where the brand puts the money in terms of just the pay-per-click or whatever the case is, where that visibility is, where I'm likely to see it on my timeline when I'm in a township, and also what then happens in store, on the shelf, what I see, what's being spoken about there. Because I suppose the two have that sort of symbiotic relationship where we have conversations about things we see. And the more we see something, the more likely we are to talk about it, right? So I think that's where you can kind of pay the money to be visible. But when you are visible, you also, I suppose, make yourself part of the conversation. But that also can reveal the flaws in your game as well.
Yes, let me just continue that a little bit and go a bit further into that intersection between brands, which is supposed to be a mark of trust, going back to sort of marketing 101, brands, trust, and loyalty, and how that fits into the township market in particular, and also bringing in spaza shops into the conversation. Who owns the trust in that relationship? We know the trust is breaking down everywhere if you read the reports that show this. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so I think in terms of, so something, of course, massive happened last year within the spaza shop market between November and say about February with the registration drive of spazas, right? Yeah. So I suppose prior to that, trust was tarnished between the spaza shop owner and the customer. So going in there, that trust also affected brands by and large, right? So what then happened following this drive to register spaza shops? Our respondents are telling us that they trust spaza shops more after the registration, and that they are likely to go to a spaza shop that is owned by someone they know following this, because of course there were fatalities, there were people who were poisoned or rather poisonings as a result of people buying some product in spaza shops. So there was a lot of that was kind of happening. But in terms of who owns the trust, a lot of the time it's the spaza shop owner who owns the trust, the person that I have always bought from, the person who lives in my neighborhood that I know. But that space is also changing rapidly over time.
So trust is personal. It's not so easy to buy it.
No, it's difficult to buy it, yeah.
Okay, so let's change tack a little bit. We also wanted to get into local flavor, very literally. Flavor is an issue. Local is perhaps more important in the food space than it is with some of the other sectors. We know this as South Africans. We know our preferences towards international brands in certain sectors of our consumer consumption habits. But when it comes to food, a lot of international fast food chains have had a particularly hard time or made a particularly bad job of trying to enter into our marketplace. What are your comments there as to how they could perhaps do better, and or what the opportunity is for local brands to service local tastes?
Yeah. So let me rather start here, right? So because people move around from township to township, from wherever they stay to a different place, we are all traveling all the time, having different experiences. So in a township that I know, that I'm familiar with, I will know where to buy my fast food. I will know which fast food outlet to trust. But the moment I move from there to a different place, I'm much more likely to buy from a franchise, from a branded type of experience, because I know what to expect there. So as a result, we are seeing that, for instance, KFC is trusted by 31% of our respondents, Chicken Licken by 27%, by about 23% of our respondents. But then when we delve a little bit deeper to ask what local township food experiences do you like and do you have, then we start seeing that 27% of people are saying, I go to the local Shisanyama if I'm looking for fast food. I go to the local Kota outlet to buy a Kota or a Bunny Chow from a store that I know, from a store owner that I know. That, again, is one of these things where no two places sell exactly the same sort of Kota or Bunny Chow. No. So if I buy one in Soweto and I buy another one in Khayelitsha or in Langa in Cape Town, it's not going to taste the same. It's not going to be the same. So this is, I suppose, one of the things. How big brands, I suppose, can not tap into that market, but have this play along with this market is people buy you for what they've come to know and trust. So it's not always that, it isn't always the case that you need to almost pander to people's tastes as a result. I mean, we see there was a case, I think, 2 years ago of KFC trying to get into that space. There was backlash. This always happens in this sort of brand space. So I think it's this balance between appropriation and appreciation of culture and things that happen in this market.
Okay, I think we've covered quite a lot of ground. Let's take a step back and maybe if you can summarize for yourself, what are the top three takeaways as a brand strategist you'd be looking at from this report?
Sure. So I think the top ones that I think would be, I think, understanding what happens when people struggle, when there are economic constraints, and how can I fit within those economic constraints as a brand. So what happens is that people change brands, people change experiences, people look for better deals. And as a brand, you can't always be discounting yourself or discounting your products all the time. But what you can do is show that you are loyal to the communities that you deal with and no two townships are the same. So find ways of being present, even in tough economic times when people are kind of looking. The other one, which is the biggest chapter in this year's reports, is the chapter on money. Just savings, stockfels, loans, banking, payments, and all of that. So what we are seeing in that space is that, again, community trust matters a lot. So most people have funeral insurance rather than life and medical aid in the township market. Most people have funeral insurance, and a lot of them are saying they take up their funeral insurance with the local funeral parlor rather than an established brand. So how do you, as an established brand, again, partner, be present? There's also a big takeout of 91% of our respondents say they have a bank account, but they don't use their card a lot. They feel like their banks don't trust them much. They feel like, rather, they don't trust banks much. They feel like their banks don't understand them much. They withdraw the money and use cash. They use the bank for convenience purposes to receive their money, but they don't use their bank account to transact. So that's another way that I would go. Mm-hmm. If I'm a bank, if I'm a financial services institution, what am I doing to build trust and to enable people to use my products and my brand more often than just once a month when they get their money and withdraw and then go use their cash?
Amazing. And one more question on the report itself, and that is, what is the one thing that you see brands getting the most wrong when it comes to this market?
I think the one thing, and I mean, we I think for the most part of this conversation, we've been saying, The township. There is no township. There are townships. And we shouldn't see townships as the same. It's just that for the purposes of research, we try as much as possible to narrow it down by location, to narrow it down by age group, by gender. But you should, if you're trying to understand the township market, be present, be visible, and don't see townships are not monolithic. Mm. Yeah.
And now looking ahead to the next 5 years, what is your biggest and or most surprising prediction about how this market is going to evolve?
I think the biggest thing is it's going to evolve digitally, and it's not going to evolve digitally in ways that we expect, because different communities and different individuals interact and engage with digital platforms and the digital world differently. It's going to constantly find ways and inroads to redefine and define itself within digital platforms, because that's where the townships are seeing the most benefit. So the biggest, I suppose the biggest thing of the past year or two has been that there are eateries and experiences in townships that don't advertise and that live only in one township. So there's a place called Guacoach in Soweto that specializes in pork and pork products, and it's only in Soweto. But people in Cape Town, in Durban, know about this place and would seek it out only because it was spread so much on social media and on TikTok and by people who've been spreading it. So I think while it's becoming a branded world, I believe it's going to become more and more an experiential world, especially in the township.
That's an amazing insight. I don't think many people have thought about it in that way. And that's a wrap on today's episode. A huge thank you to Mongezi for unpacking the Township CX report and helping us understand the evolving dynamics of the not monoculture that is the township market. From digital word of mouth to shifting shopping behaviors, it's clear that these communities are at the cutting edge of consumer innovation. If today's conversation has sparked new ideas for you, don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow us on Wrapped Biz Trends TV. You can also catch us on Biz Community, The Real Network, YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. On behalf of me, Bronwyn Williams, and my guest today, Biz Community and Wrap Creative, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time with more exciting trends and insights.